You're listening to a podcast from 702.
702.
The upside of failure.
Sometimes failure is the foundation of greatest success stories.
So today we are featuring a master on the upside of failure. This Sphiwe Mhlambi is an absolute master when it comes to jazz photography, documenting and telling the story of jazz in this country. He was the winner of the 22nd Standard Bank Joy of Jazz Honors Award. That was in 2019, and also the Jazz World Photo Finalist in 2021. And he started his life in a really kind of tough way. The last time he joined us on the show, we were exploring his very challenged early beginnings in life. He had to start school at the age of 13, but he overcame so many obstacles and he managed to finish school. He managed to acquire ID documents because he didn't have for a very long time till he was 24. So he couldn't find full-time employment. But once he overcame all these obstacles, he really made a name for himself as a photographer, not only in news, but also in the art space. So this afternoon, we join him ahead of an exhibition that is coming up, his third annual exhibition. He has an immense collection of images from over the years that he's going to be sharing, and this time, a third year running. Abuti Sphiwe, thank you so much for joining us. Always a pleasure to talk to you.
Well, thank you so much. Always good talking to you.
Yeah, so we'll talk about failure a little bit later. But, you know, when I got the details of your exhibition, so much went through my mind about this incredible privilege that you have, you know, to be in that pit, to be granted this very exclusive access to artists, bands and events that most people don't get access to. And over the years, what do you think, or what have you observed to be what makes jazz musicians such fascinating subjects, especially for you as a photographer?
Well, you know, this is just so, it is not easy for you. It looks easy on an outside. It's like somebody paging through a magazine and just page by page. And when you consider the work that went there for the editor, the designer, the photographer, the journalist, and just to flip the page like that, you're flipping immense work from those individuals. Mm-hmm. It's the same with jazz, because you really have to be in that space. You have to be in a moment of where they are. You can't come from a different field and you want to change things where they are. But also perseverance and humble yourself, because for you to go beyond the stage where you just photograph, everybody will have the same image. But if they grant you that respect, where you meddle with them, you are backstage when rehearsals, when they do sound check and all of that, it's a privilege, which is what I went on. But obviously, I didn't know this, which was lack of confidence, my disadvantage, things that I failed dismally on as growing up, because I didn't have much confidence. I didn't believe that anybody would listen to me and all of that, as you put it on an intro. But you work on these things, so you understand that, okay, I lack in this regard, I lack in that area, so you work on that. I've had a lot of failures, but time moves, so you have to evolve, and you have to change, and you have to work on your failing, or where you lack, like in this case, it was my confidence, but I'm working on it. I'm getting there.
Yeah, so who would you say was a musician or a band that where you had to overcome and find your confidence in relating to them? And because this is what you're able to share with us now is the product of years of establishing these relationships, of, as you say, being embraced and being invited within this very exclusive circle. But just when you think back, just some of the musicians that you really felt intimidated by and had to kind of overcome even your own fears to get into the inner circle.
You know, the person that really build that confidence in me to face that was a person that was not a full-time musician, but he used to have a club in Soweto called the Blue Fountain, and he was himself a resident musician at his own club. This was the late Godfrey Malone, godfather of Soweto. This is the guy that, he was a very intimidating person when you see him, but he could see that I'm afraid of him and I'm scared of him, and I didn't have much confidence even to talk to him. But we built a friendship that lasted a very, very long time until he passed. And then my next level, moving from there, I met somebody that really, really shaped me to be what I am today, that supports this Mabuse, you know. You know, he wouldn't invite me. Fana, we're playing at Kippies, you know, come check us out. So every time I would always have a camera, and whatever they are, whatever Harare or Super Hot Six is, and I'll always be there. So that build from meeting other people, and then I end up meeting people like Winston Mankungugozi, you know, or Alan Kwela, Sponsile Khumalo. And then slowly, then I gradually, you know, and that's why even now it's easy to interact with them. It's easy to really go beyond just music, because most of the artists with friends, you know, the best man when they get married, their weddings, or you attend their family funerals, you have dinners together. So it has gone to that far, but it didn't start that easy in the beginning.
Yes, absolutely. You know, when you said Kippies, and I think now you were photographing that historic place or performances that happened in that historic club.
Yes.
I think of Baseline, the years of Baseline, which was in Melville at the time, and Kippies was in Newtown, that those were also just really magical years when it comes to South African jazz. It was soon after the new dispensation. It's like we had this massive excitement and just madness and magic happening in Guaito, right? And at the same time, there was also a lot of extraordinary things happening in the jazz space, and how we would all be squashed and packed inside these small venues just to be able to see these musicians on stage.
Yeah, it was exactly that. I mean, the jazz venues were very small. I didn't understand, though, this was happening. Why would a jazz venue be so small? And then another concert, you go to find really huge. Other venues are big, amphitheaters, all that. But just venues are small. I mean, there was another one with Bruce Movement and Village Walk.
Yes.
The Basement. It was so tiny, you know, and all of those. But somehow, that music, I probably got to understand, because it's a small crowd music. It's not a festival. And this was happening in those days, like from 1991. And when Kwaito came around, and I remember even when I was talking to people like Abo Aka, because we used to, there was a place in Shawela called the Kaba V in Shawela 3, just opposite the Triple C.
Yes.
And then there was this guy, David and Pat McGarty. I think Kaba V was called for their names. And they were pulling up stall there and all of that. When they were starting in Soweto. And I was thinking, okay, what is this genre of music now? And I used to criticize it a lot. Quite, and then there was everybody there, you know, we will always be around there, kind of fancy. But I didn't want to be, you know, diverted off jazz that I loved at the time. But Quite came so strong, you know, it took everybody by storm, but we still followed it, you know. And like I said, I think somehow Sipo got me out of that a little bit, because you could have been swung over into a different genre of music. But Sipo will always say, no, Baba, this is good, this is what you should do. And obviously around the same time, started collecting music, you know, the vinyls, and you listen more. So I couldn't. I mean, it sounds bad for me to say the archive that I have is probably 90% jazz. Not that I don't document other genres of music. I do, but my love is on jazz.
Yes. Let's take a break, Abud Spiwa, then we'll come back and explore more of this fascinating occupation. And as he says, one of his notable failures was not having enough self-confidence, in fact, to be able to own the space, this privilege that he has been given and afforded, but soon learned that he had to. And I think that's why he sits in the position he's in today, because he has such an extensive archive, which I think goes a long way in telling the story of jazz history in South Africa. More with him after the break.
702.
The upside of failure.
21 minutes past two, and we've been talking to really a master at what he does, and that is jazz and documentary photographer Sipho Mhlambi. He's also a visual artist, Jazz World photo finalist for 2021, and winner of the 22nd Standard Bank Joy of Jazz Honours Award for 2019. He's got an exhibition that is coming up. In fact, it kicks off today, and it goes on until the 17th of October at Photo ZA Gallery in Rosebank. So we're talking jazz photography, and of course examining some of the times and areas of failure across his stellar career. Abud Spiwa, you also say that This meant a lot of traveling. Passion, need and the work of photographing jazz giants on the stage meant traveling, and that would obviously have a consequence on your family life.
No, it did, big time, and a lot. I mean, I got married 2000 to Sia, Nokhang Mhlambi. It didn't take us long because this is when I was at the peak of my career. I just joined Media 24, and I was traveling extensively. I mean, I remember I went to Europe, you know, when our soccer players were, South Africa was allowed now to play football internationally. We had Abufil Masinga in Bali, Italy, Augustine Makalakalan in Turkey. They were just all over the place. Lucas Khatib was in Leeds. So I traveled to all these countries to go meet all these players with Mandy Collins at True Love Magazine. And it just didn't sit well because every moment I'd be on the road. And that cost me my marriage in 2000. Mm. And obviously, you know, it was just a sad moment. And I thought, I don't know, you know, when you get married to somebody who's, you know, different in fields that you are in. And sometimes you collide a lot about simple issues. For me, it was not really paying attention to my marriage, but it was just doing my work. But obviously, it didn't come across as such. But I tried to rectify it. And I tried again on my second marriage, getting an artist, you know, which was Judith. Then both of us were traveling. So, and then just left a big vacuum there on our thought, what is it that you have to do? But you always have to refer and see, because it costs a family, and as you don't get to do things that you have to do as a responsible parent, because you're always out there. Even if you take your kids here, even if you, they understand, but you still need to be present. So it's in a way that really cost me dearly. And I hope it doesn't happen again. But at least now I know things that I should be doing or not doing, especially when you get involved with people.
Yes, I was going to say, what are the lessons then that you've drawn from those losses?
You know, it's just it's planning. There's a lot of planning that needs to be. And obviously, you have to open with things up
and
front.
Communicate
and open up and then plan and then obviously agree on these things. Because sometimes you feel like you have the right to tell your partner, like, no, I'm going to work. And you expect that person to understand that you are going to work. Mm. Yes, you are going to work, but you still need to be here at the same time. So how can you divide the time when you're home or you are away? And this has been there throughout. I mean, I remember even when I joined, I think the City Press at the time. I was young, but working with older people. So when comes holiday, Christmas, New Year, whatever, they will take their holidays, but you, because I wasn't married, I was young, and I didn't have children, so they give you those long assignments when you're on the road. I mean, I went with Super Jacobs from Bike Bridge all the way up to Zambia on the cargo trucks, you know.
Wow.
And, you know, but I left my family behind. What were they thinking? But you have to wait. You just have to do that work. I learned that I shouldn't repeat that. I don't think I would ever put anybody in that environment because my work requires me always to travel. Even if sometimes, like today, I don't travel because of work, because I'm self-employed now, but I still have to grow my archive of jazz. So I will go to Montreal, I'll go to Miami, I'll join the North Sea Festival all over the world. I will go. The Blue Note has a cruise that goes to different islands. I always go there. But then, at least, I'm not married right now, so I don't have a committed relationship. But it's still something that I can negotiate. Whenever I get to that stage, it has to be a person that understands that there's a lot of traveling involved.
Yes, wow. That is also a profound lesson, and I guess one that is a cost during our earlier years, you know, and so can do things differently when we're older. And then you also talk about money, how you've managed money, that this being another area that you think you haven't really fared well or in a matured kind of way in.
Yes, that is probably one of the biggest problems I had. You know, I suppose, you know, the structure of money, you have to understand money and the value of money and grow up with it. So you can't be taught that at a later stage on the value of money. So you have to understand. That's why now, I mean, it's a thing, like in the olden days, like a money box, so you have to put your coins there and all that. It's sort of a teaching, so that when you grow, money has to be saved. So I lived on the edge somehow, because thinking, I'll make that money tomorrow, because there's work available. You know, even if I finish it off now, I'll make another one tomorrow. But then things change completely. Like now we're under this COVID. So if you have savings, if you have reserves and all of that, it's all done. And there's still no work. So it's failed on both ways. But if you had started in an earlier time where you saved money, you have. Luckily on my side, I'll say maybe I save my money in my archive and my work rather than monetary, you know, buying things around. But I also saved this money in terms of money. But I've since then changed. I joined, we have a AMPD studio in Newtown, which I shoot for. And we have master classes there that teaches you about money all the time. So I went through that whole course. I understand the money, my account today. I mean, we discovered, I'm not sure if I should mention these people, but your bank accounts, and I teach you how you save money. If today, for me, at any given time, I would never spend 10% of the money that I don't have. If I have 100 rands and I want something that is 100 rands, I need to make sure that I have 90% of that value back in my account. So it's different. It's just a self-teaching that you know that, you know what, I don't need to buy everything. If I see a pair of jeans that I like and it's 1,000 rand, I must have at least 90% of that money in my account and spend the 10%. But I'm not going to have it the other way around, which is right. What I did before. You know, I would buy a car cash, I'll buy a watch, or I'll buy a camera, I'll do all of those things. But now you have to understand that if you spend money so that you can save it tomorrow when there's no work.
Wow. You know, I love what you're saying about the fact that if you didn't grow up with those lessons, then you're likely to learn them in a really painful way. So it's important to inculcate these money lessons very early on into our children. Let's quickly talk about the exhibition before we wrap, because this is your third annual exhibition. And this also speaks to you revisiting your archives and bringing forth even more intimate images that you've captured over the years. What can we expect this time around?
You know, it's been going on. You know, I mean, you have different things as you go along. Bringing back the old work that I've done. I think my first one was just celebrating 30 years of photographing here. So I went all the way back from my first image up to the last. And the second one, obviously, was more celebrating different genres of music, the groups, the trios, you know, individuals, soloists, and all of that. But today is a celebration of just what jazz, how beautiful it is, you know, the glamour part of it. People that are beautiful, you know, nice makeup, dressed up, you know, photo shoots, nice light on stage, and all those. So today I'm just celebrating the beauty of jazz, the glamour of jazz, you know, the greatness of jazz, you know, the jazz styles, you know, the heads, you know. I mean, you see people still dress like that, like Prince Lumwasa would still dress in a certain way. So you showcase that, like Bruce Kumalo still dress in a particular way. So you're just celebrating the jazz signature look, or I should say, yeah, something like that. But it's just, and then it's about 50 pieces of that, and we have images of behind the scenes of video, you know, video shooting or sound checks.
Wow.
Or, you know, and then last year we had a lot of behind the scenes concerts. Mm-hmm. You know, people were recording from their homes, streaming their work. You know. Just a bit of that, but just giving you a picture of, you know what, it survived. There's a look that you said is a jazz look, you know, the way the guy plays with the smoke, like there's a nice image of African kids with a cigarette and then a smoke going out, you know, playing like that. Just the freedom of jazz in totality. That's what we celebrate in this time.
Oh, it's going to be beautiful. Thank you very much. Looking forward to experiencing this third exhibition. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
That's Ntate's Piwe Mhlambi, Abuti's Piwe, jazz photographer. He plays such an integral role in the telling of the story of jazz in South Africa, documenting the jazz story in South Africa. There's an archive, you know, and this archive is so critical to when we do look back and get a sense of what was happening in this time. And he does it in that jazz culture, so true to that jazz culture. His black and white images, his color images, so thought through, whether it's the contorted face of the guitarist who's like lost in a melody, or that arched back of a trumpeter as they blow that horn, and like, or a concentrating band leader when someone else is taking the solo, or just the joy on a vocalist's face. He's there taking these images, and he's truly a master at it. It was Billy Monanma who posted to say that this is the man behind the lens, a man that makes us look like millionaires on photos. Legendary and award-winning photographer Phoem Hlambi. So check out his exhibition at Photo ZA Gallery starting today until the 17th of October.